Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about the second half of the CW DC shows versus the Marvel television and Netflix shows. Of course, I'm my co-host, JT for Saskatoon.
Hello.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Jesus Christ, my ears.
I thought I was very soft that time. But anyways, as I said last week, we are continuing. We were left off around The Flash. I think The Flash had a pretty solid cast. A couple of good episodes at the beginning, but as we detailed last time, fell into this rut of Flash being a crossover and speedster villains. Speedster villains. Nothing but speedster villains. I don't want to take away from the fact that I want to reiterate, lots of solid actors there. Like the guy who plays Wells, solid actor, is able to do a gamut of different roles, but unfortunately they made him do a gamut of different roles. Sometimes you just have to, when you kill off a character, you just have to retire the actor.
But that's why they introduced the multiverse, so they would never have to retire the actor.
But the multiverse is gone now, so now they have to.
Well, it's still there, they just don't know about it yet.
So, where did you just stop even watching The Flash? Not even religiously watching, just stop tuning in? Because when did you stop? Because I'll tell you, when I stopped was when they tried to do, like right after they did Flashpoint, I just only watched one if I heard something especially egregious or interesting online. I didn't have an interest to tune in anymore after Flashpoint.
It's cute that you assumed I stopped watching The Flash. Honestly, it's adorable.
Red?
I don't know exactly. Sometime after Savitar, I was just like, this is retarded, I'm done.
He is the future Flash. There is no comma. The comma was an illusion.
You know, with Hollywood, and I know we're talking about TV show, it's just, I use Hollywood. Hollywood's predilection for being inclusive and having, you know, other characters, you know, besides just here's pretty white person number 315. You know, you could have done the comic book Savitar, who is this Indian Air Force pilot who got sucked into the Speed Force and was spat out years later. You could have used that as an excuse to bring in Max Mercury as, like, you know, the Zen master of speed and teach Barry a little bit more about how the Speed Force works, and still had Savitar be the main villain. And again, like I said last episode when we really leaned into it, I got no problem with the speedster villain. Your main superhero is a speedster. Makes sense his villains would be speedsters. The problem with that in the Flash show is he has so many great villains that aren't speedsters, but executives, no, people get confused if the bad guy doesn't run really fast. But Savitar would have made a great villain. Even the hackneyed backstory about him being like the origin of the Speed Force or whatever BS origin they were trying to give him, you know, make it whole cyclical.
The thing with Savitar that fucking pissed me off is they were hinting that he was somebody else at first.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Big time. Like, it wasn't a matter of, we're just giving you a red herring. It was, he was actually somebody else. You had fucking plans for him.
I had a really way out theory on that, but I'll let Red finish first. Sorry.
But for some fucking reason, all of a sudden, it's Barry's confusing time clone, which somehow survived the original fight with Savitar and then became Savitar. Okay.
They went a lot of different ways with Savitar that just didn't make sense. Because Red's right. There was this whole thing where you had Jay Garrick outright say, yeah, Savitar is a Speed Force myth. Everyone who's ever taps the Speed Force and eventually learns enough knows about Savitar, and he basically challenges different speedsters from different timelines when they are ready to be a challenge to him. That was the storyline they built. They said he was the birth of speed. That was a little hyperbolic. I can totally see them backing off on that. But everything else, they sort of pushed really hard on this whole he challenges people when they are when they rise enough in ability to be
You
challenged.
sure
Not.
that was Savitar, though? Because I thought that was the tack they took with Zoom.
That was Savitar because Zoom captured Jay Garrick like for the whole season, so he wouldn't be able to tell him that.
Okay, it's been a while since I watched the first couple of seasons, but no, like I said, my theory on who Savitar was and how he was somebody else's, my theory was he was going to be Ronnie Raymond because of how the original Firestorm, sacrificed himself at the end of season one because of the black hole that opened over Central City. And when that came out, it's like, well, makes sense because he got sucked into, the multiverse, Speed Force, whatever, and it becomes this whole self-fulfilling paradox, which makes about as much sense as Savitar being this time remnant who's going to get wiped out of existence at any second. So he wears this dumb
Megatron.
Michael Bay Transformer looking armored suit that somehow prevents, I don't know, tachyon radiation from wiping him out. Again, that makes about as much sense as the explanation we got in the show. No, they did have with Ramsey, who is the human identity of the villain Bloodwork, who was the main villain prior to Crisis in the last season, and they went, they dove headfirst into the Mirror Master villainy. I can't remember the actor's name. He was one of the leads on Heroes back in the day. He's one of my favorite actors on Heroes. And he played Bloodwork, who's like this scientist. He's got this blood cancer or some weird fatal blood disease that's killing him. And he uses dark matter infused technology to try and fix himself. And he becomes like this weird, gooey, blood zombie superpower he gets. I mean, it was sufficiently creepy, although they leaned really heavy into that Hollywood trope of zombies have black veins popping out all over the place because that's how zombies do. A
The
lot of the.
other, if I may,
Yeah.
the other thing I want to point out about that is Bloodwork was severely rushed because Crisis was coming. And partially, I think that's because the writers and producers of all shows, I think that while they communicate with each other, they didn't communicate well with each other because lots of the other shows, especially Supergirl, had that same thing of. With whenever there's like a major crossover event, it feels so disconnected with the rest of the show, and it's almost like we need to rush this up or we need to put this on pause. And when it feels that blatant, it takes you out of the narrative really easily.
And it's kind of like to dip back into my love of 90s comics. It's when they had Ghost Rider and the Midnight Suns with Marvel in the 90s. And the first year, 2 years of that was, I feel, pretty solid. Not rock solid, but a lot better than people might remember it being. But that's because they had, a couple of editors steering the ship and keeping everyone focused. And that's the problem with a lot of these Arrowverse crossovers. It's I kind of like the original, like the early crossovers where, it starts on Arrow, ends on Flash, expands to Supergirl. And it's like that old school, it's like the Batman Hulk crossover, Spider-Man Superman, where they just happen to be in the same world and they just accept, oh, hey, it's Bruce Banner in Gotham City. And it's just boom, and they run with the story. One of the many problems I feel, as much as I enjoyed Crisis for what it was, one of the biggest problems with that is there was too much setup, and there was almost so much setup, people forgot to tell a coherent story, and that's also because they didn't really have like one or two people steering the ship on that. And just mentioned Supergirl. I like Supergirl initially. The first two or three seasons, I really did enjoy it. I mean, Melissa Benoist, or Benoist. I don't know how you pronounce her last name. I think she's really good as Kara. I enjoyed her performances. I forget the name of the actress who plays her sister was really good. Guy plays Martian Manhunter, rock solid. But somewhere around tail end of season three into season four, they took that hard turn into virtue signaling Snowflake territory.
They had that for early on.
Well, yeah, but the last two or three seasons, they really drove headfirst that even the, you know, aliens, alien racism in like the third season wasn't nearly as ham-fisted. Close, but not nearly as ham-fisted as everything that followed that.
The problem I had with Supergirl is it never really had an identity of its own when it started. Season one, again, I agree that a lot of the casting was solid. I thought that the, what's her name, Melissa?
Yeah.
Was a good pick for Supergirl. She had like this adorable, cute geekiness about her that I thought worked for the character. But the stories were just not great. It felt like half superhero show, half Felicity. And
yeah.
It never really got beyond that in the first season. Go ahead, Red.
There was, in the first season, there was, what do you call it, a disconnect. And I know why the disconnect exists. They were trying to do a storyline where Supergirl was trying to break out on her own and be Supergirl. She didn't want to be in Superman's shadow.
Yes.
But the thing is, Superman was like a shadow character. Like, he never saw his face.
But he kept showing up.
He just showed up once in a while, like, I think twice in the season. They should have had an actor playing him from day one. He should have been more in the show, and he should have had more of a presence. That way, there was an actual shadow for her to get out of. Yeah. But the disconnect is that there was no shadow. She was trying to escape, like, from the audience's point of view, she was trying to escape from a shadow where there was none.
A shadow of a shadow.
Yeah, because most of the audience, they don't have a connection to Superman, like most of the people watching it. You're just expecting, like, comic book fans to watch the show and be, bang, okay, it's Superman, I understand that she's under the show. She feels intimidated by him and she wants to break out on her own, but not everybody who's watching the show is going to be a comic book fan.
I think a big part of that was the whole you can only reference characters mandate for like the bigger name DC characters, like just like how with Batman, we can't say the Batman word at all. For the first couple of seasons, yeah. It was only like really late that they were like, okay, you can say Batman once in a while. And I think it's the same with Superman, where you can say Superman, but you can't do too much with it. We don't want people to know what Superman is because we might be doing another Superman movie, or we were doing another Superman movie, so we don't want to muddy the waters. Which I think is fucking retarded, but Red's absolutely right. Superman was too much of this, of a shadow of a shadow. He kind of existed. If you were a comic fan, you knew what to expect of a general outline of what Superman is. But everyone else would not know what to expect of Superman other than what they just absorbed through the public zeitgeist, which really wouldn't give you enough to get a feel of what this shadow Kara is trying to get under is like. Like I said, go ahead, Red. Go ahead, JT. Sorry.
I was going to say, like, we know it's Tyler Hoechlin, I think is his name, the guy they got to play Superman. He's going to be in the forthcoming Superman and Lois series. And I love his performance. If they had cast him, because he first debuted in the first couple episodes of season two, then, you know, very sparingly used in that season and smattering going forward. If they had him cast during season one, they should have used him in season, like you guys are saying, like you want to develop this shadow, because just to have her sit there and kind of whining about how everyone, like her sister and her mom, are telling her not to, you know, use her powers and hide who you are and that sort of thing. It's a very kind of powerful story on a lot of levels for a lot of people. But yeah, it's you see this. She got her bell rang, but I think it was like Neutron in the first season. And then we see Clark is like this blurry shadow hovering over. He's like, don't worry, cuz I got this. And he takes off and that's it. And I think right from the beginning, Supergirl, that's its biggest problem, is it's unbalanced in they go so far with one tack of all this good stuff in her life. And then they have to overcompensate by just making everything almost grim dark, like the Children of Liberty or Rain. And I think it was like season 3, where she's basically an evil Supergirl and these heretofore unknown Kryptonian mystics are going to use her to end all life on Earth.
That got old fast.
Oh dear God, it did. I mean, I love, you got stuff like, I think it's like season 3, they introduce Lena Luthor as, you know, she's not a complete dick the way her brother Lex is. I liked what they did with Lena, and until they decided to, you know, she's been way too positive an influence on Supergirl. Let's have her just go completely off the rails, where she finds out Kara's really Supergirl, and she gets, well, admittedly, she's more than welcome to get butt hurt, because you find out your best friend is this Sooth, has been lying to you about this double life. Why wouldn't you be upset? I wouldn't try and remove emotions and the ability to make choice from the whole of humanity just because my friend didn't tell me a secret. It's like, oh wait, she's been way too positive. We got to make her just like Lex. Why?
That sounds like a very emotional decision to make that will affect many other people without thinking about it.
Well, they were trying to give her Lex Luthor since the beginning. They were using, what the fuck is his name at first?
Max Lord.
Smeagol? Max Lord.
I thought you were talking about the actor who played Lex Luthor.
No, we'll get to Lenny Luthor in a minute here. But yeah, no, they had Peter Facinelli from Fox's Fastlane, and he was the head vampire dad in Twilight. You know, and they literally...
And some guy in that other room called me an asshole.
Yeah. He gets like one mention in the first episode of the second season, never mentioned again for like, I think, 2 or 3 episodes. In the third season, you get, Adrian Pastar from Heroes, and he played Major Talbot on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Morgan Edge. Who's a character that's a deep cut from Superman history for those who know comics, especially Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen. And yeah, he gets roughed up and then he's gone, never to be mentioned again. Yeah, like they tried to give her all these, like even Rain, it's like they tried to do with Supergirl what they did with the Flash, and every villain has to be on par with the hero, or even have similar powers to the hero. Because, you know, again, the Superman family have some pretty colorful villains. It would be, give any of them a run for their money, but the executives are like, nope, people are going to get confused if the villain isn't on the same level. And then they brought in Lex Luthor.
I don't blame that on the executives. I blame that on the writers.
Yeah.
Writers and executives. And there's no one person responsible for that.
It's a well-known documented fact that the writers don't know shit about superheroes. Like, they don't read the comics. They don't... The most they know is from the movies. And, like, what the fuck? I can't remember. There's a... It's mostly on Reddit and 4chan where I learned all this, that they were drama writers. Like, they wrote the other WB shows or CW shows. And that's where they came from. That's what they knew to write. And you can see it all over fucking Flash and Supergirl and all that shit, where it's all they focus on is like teenage drama bullshit.
Yeah. No. Yeah, Supergirl, from what I've read, some of the scandal sheets and the rumor pages recently, like the upcoming season of Supergirl is going to be the last season. And the rumor is they're going to end it with her going to the 30th century to be with Monel and join the Legion of Superheroes, which is, something they've done in the comics. I think that was pre-Crisis that they did that. And then you had the, when they rebooted the Legion, and I think that's like second version of a teenage Legion in the 2000s when Mark Waid was writing it, and they're all like, "Get out of the way, Grandpa! Let us young folks handle things, and authority is bad and all that." I don't know. I'm not sad at all that you would think. Given my predilection for being a bit of a Pollyanna amongst the three of us, I would be sad that it's ending, and I'm not. I'm almost giddy at the prospect. Dear God, is that cynicism?
Well, Supergirl had a lot of disappointments because there's this. I remember before I tuned out on it, they were hinting that there's an evil Supergirl out there. And I was like, and are they going to introduce Power Girl? Is that like, I kind of was like, okay, I might get back into this series. No, it's a dumb fucking Russian Supergirl
Red
clone.
Daughter,
Yeah.
which is basically trying to ape off of Red Sun, but in a
Yeah.
stupid way.
And then they did one thing, one check casting choice that I loved,
Okay.
and I think it vindicates. It's kind of like George Clooney owning why everyone hated Batman and Robin, and they cast fucking Lenny Luthor from Superman 4 as Lex Luthor. And well, he's, yes, right.
I have to give him props because when I first heard him cast as Lex Luthor, I thought it was an awful fucking idea. You have this fucking hobbit playing Lex Luthor, a guy, Lex Luthor, who's obsessed with his fucking image, obsessed with appearing to be the perfect human. So he's always working out, he's always fit, he's always like constantly preening themselves to look handsome, to look shaved. And you have this fucking hobbit with this shitty fucking beard and shit playing fucking Lex Luthor. And I was disappointed. But when it came to the Crisis episode and he had the perfect amount of Luthor's pettiness in that during that the Crisis episodes that I watched, I was like, okay, I can believe this is Lex Luthor.
Yeah. I mean, John Cryer, for most people just know him as Alan from Two and a Half Men. The Ducky was that Pretty in Pink, I think was the film, one of the John Hughes movies. He's a really good actor, and that's one of the things I loved about his Lex Luthor is that smoothness that he had, like that self-assured kind of alpha male energy that he was putting out there, because it's Lex flipping Luthor. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't all good. I mean, what kind of plan is it to just walk into that container that's going to spray you with the gas that's going to give you the super cancer just so you can guilt trip your sister into curing you? Not exactly the best plan, Lex, but my favorite moment of John Cryer's Lex Luthor was in the fourth part of the Crisis crossover, where we're on the new Amalgamated Earth Prime, and Lex Luthor, who prior to Crisis on this Earth was like sweet as pie and the nicest guy ever, and now evil Lex has taken over. And there's that scene where he's everyone's applauding him, and he gives that wink and a nod to Supergirl, and I was like, I just love it, because that's exactly what Lex Luthor would do. To twist the knife. He was just like, "How you doing, kid?" Move
Biggest,
on.
go ahead.
Sorry. No, you go.
Well, I feel like I was completely done with the CW DC shows. I know we're skipping several shows, but I felt like I was completely done right around Crisis, because Invasion was lame, but I felt like somebody in the room knew it was lame, so I felt like, okay, they're putting a lampshade on their head somewhat, I guess, not completely, but there's a bit of a nod and wink here, but Crisis was so bad, it dragged, and it tried to throw in as many, you remember this show? This was a show 20 years ago. Remember the Flash show? Remember the Michael Keaton Batman? Remember the Adam West Batman? And yeah, remember Superman Returns with Brandon Routh? And it spent more time, I felt, going back and mining those memories than telling a satisfying Crisis story.
Yeah.
And, like, I have to say, even Invasion ended with, like, a Super Friends call-out, which, well, lame, it was a lot more tongue-in-cheek, so I sort of gave that a pass. But Crisis was treated totally straight. Totally, this is serious business, guys, and that's exactly why I didn't take it seriously. What I thought was hilarious about Crisis was just how sucky CW's leak control was. Because months before it aired, people were like, oh, Lucifer's going to be in it. And so many people didn't realize Lucifer was a DC show. I thought that was hilarious.
Well, they never really advertised it as even being based on a comic. Which
to its credit, because yeah. I think it works better if you don't even have those comics in your, if you don't even have like Lucifer Morningstar comics in your brain.
Well, it's also very loosely, very loose. Yeah.
You are completely very, correct. Completely correct.
Very, very loosely based off of the comics.
110% correct, which I again think it's a makes it better than it could have been because.
Well, the comic book Lucifer would be like, I'm a fucking detective. An assistant to a detective on a fucking show? This is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm just going to wipe these people out of existence and go on with the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so firmly in the vein of Neil Gaiman's Sandman versus that. And that's the best thing they did with the Lucifer show was take the baseline concept. Lucifer goes on vacation and locks the gates of, or he goes on vacation and opens a piano bar. End of fucking list.
And again, I feel like there's lots of good things about Lucifer. We're not going to touch too much on Lucifer. I think that Lucifer is off the rails now. And who knows where it's going to go from here. But
yeah.
But Tom Ellis. Out of all the call-outs in Crisis, the only one that actually made me smile was Tom Ellis' Lucifer showing up for 30 seconds, even more than John Constantine showing up. And John Constantine is another show I'm going to very briefly touch, is one where you have really great casting. The guy playing Constantine's perfect.
Matt Ryan.
Yeah, the early episodes were written pretty well, but I gotta be honest, there is a reason that show was canceled.
It was on NBC and they didn't promote it properly.
It had to do with the satanic imagery and people calling her basically making a big stink about that.
Yeah. And another thing, and I read an interview with one of the exec producers shortly after Constantine was canceled on NBC. They have that bit at the end of the first episode. It's like where my name's John Constantine, which is very, like, the writers, that is part and parcel taken from The Flash and Arrow. They were going to use that as an intro for every episode, and they basically got a cease and desist letter from DC, and there's like, didn't we license? No, you can't do that. Because, again, it goes to DC's, like, myopic, we can't confuse the customers, because then they won't know what's going on. It's like, it goes to that whole, you can't use Batman, you can only mention like three out of the dozen things of Batman that are smeared all over Arrow.
There is a Dark Knight in Gotham City.
Yeah.
Like, the one thing I loved about Constantine was the big F you, the big fuck you they gave to NBC in the last couple episodes.
How so?
Constantine wasn't allowed to smoke.
Ah.
On camera. Like, they'd show him, like, lighting up a smoke later on, like, walking away, but he wasn't allowed to smoke on camera. The last couple episodes, after they learned they were canceled, he was smoking in front of the fucking camera.
Yeah. I think, like, not even the first episode, they had, like, beginning of the second episode where he's, and it's an actual magical thing, like, reading tea leaves where you divine the future by the way its smoke moves in the air. Yeah, I mean, Matt Ryan, God, I can't remember, is the guy who played Chaz, and, you know, they took Chaz from being like this kind of weak-willed South London cab driver to being like this guy who's like, if he wasn't a biker in a previous life, I would have been very surprised, like American Chaz. And the way they gave him the, like, 101 deaths because of he was in this magical explosion at a nightclub, and Constantine basically cast his spell beforehand that, like, absorbed all the other people's lives and put them in Chaz, and that's why, like, the first episode he gets impaled by a live electrical wire, and then, like, after the commercial break, he's alive again. Did you guys notice how they were, like, just ham-fistedly referencing John or Jim Corrigan was going to become the Spectre?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Just again, it feels like it never really had enough of a solid footing to get that much ambition that early. So on the inverse, let's talk about a very similar Marvel show that just started.
Gee, Ben, what show is that?
You tell me, JT.
Well, much like our beloved compadre Red can't help but torture himself by watching Discovery and feeling himself bleed from his eyes, I marathoned the Hulu Hellstrom series over the weekend. I'm not sure that I can feel anything anymore. I definitely can't feel joy. Ooh, boy, where do I start with this? I'm going to start with the positive. A little backstory. Hellstrom was not supposed to be the first horror-based Marvel TV series. They were working on this concept with, I think it was just going to be on Hulu. They were going to have this thing basically umbrellaed under the title Adventure into Fear. And there was going to be first a Ghost Rider television series based on the version of Robbie Reyes that we got in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That got shit canned for little to no reason, at least that I can see or that I was able to discern. But they went ahead with Hellstrom, which is based on the Son of Satan, Damon Hellstorm from Marvel Comics, you know, first appeared in the late 70s, had a weird resurgence in the 90s, you know, throughout the Midnight Suns era, and then sprinkled throughout Marvel Comics history ever since, here and there, if it's anything remotely connected to demons and or one of the dozen satanic characters in the Marvel Universe, they'll use Damon. So they decided to turn this into a TV show. And I don't know what pissed me off more was the drab lack of any vibrant color in the design of this show, the bare minimum research that the writers did in using this, it is not connected to the Marvel Cinematic Universe at all. But they use concepts and characters that are tied into characters that are in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, two of the supporting characters in the show is Lucille, was it Hastings, and a man called Caretaker, who are characters that are straight out of the Midnight Suns Marvel Comics era. You also have, and this is the thing that pissed me off the most, is they spend 90% of the series trying to prevent their dad's resurrection, who in this show is not, he's purportedly supposed to be Satan, but is just told, we're just told he's this really satanic serial killer. And you never see him, and it's like the Superman Supergirl thing where you see him in shadows and fuzzy flashbacks, and he shows up for like 2 minutes in the last scene of the show, and it's Mitch Pileggi from X-Files. And that's what pissed me off the most, is you get a very good actor who's known for playing some really bad guys, and you only use him for 2 minutes in the last episode. You fucking hacks.
Mitch Pileggi from X-Files, who's that?
Skinner.
Okay.
Skinner.
Yeah. Or Horace Pinker from Shocker, if anyone else besides me likes that movie. And so then they have, like I said, they have Caretaker, who's like this mystic, like he's like a poor man's Indiana Jones. He's connected to this group called the Blood. In the comic books, they were this sect of people with like mystic powers, and they fought against Zarathos, the spirit of vengeance. In this show, they're just a bunch of people who have been wronged by demons, and they hate everything even remotely demonic, and actually don't affect the storyline all that much. Like, they're constantly built up like they're gonna rise up and take out our main characters of Anna and Damon. Nothing happens.
So what other Marvel shows were there? Are we missing any other Marvel shows?
Well, I think we mentioned last episode, you know, we talked a bit about the Netflix series. None of us really watched the Runaways or Cloak and Dagger. I talked a little bit about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And yeah, there's Hellstrom. I mean, they got stuff going forward. Like, we haven't spoken about the Phase 4 shows, so we can speak on that a little bit. First thing I want to mention about that.
What about Fuck Batman?
That show doesn't exist, and I'll thank you not to bring it up again. Recently, it was reported a while ago that Titania Maslany, the main actress from the show Orphan Black, I can't say her name to save my life, was supposed to be playing Jennifer Walters in the forthcoming She-Hulk series. And just last week, reports came out where she said, I am not even remotely connected to that. Like, she is not playing Jennifer Walters, which made me a little bit sad because I think she's a really good actress. And
fake news.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, the most stuff that we know about any of the forthcoming shows is just really the first four is we're getting a What If series, which is going to be like an animated series, and we're going to be getting like Hayley Atwell back to voice Peggy Carter and Chris Evans. Like, a lot of the Marvel movie actors, from what I read, are in talks to come back and voice their characters in one or two episodes. No talk if, you know, Uatu is going to be like the leader, if it's just going to be more of just an anthology thing and we're dropped right into it. We've got the Loki series, which, from what I read, he's been captured by the time cops of the Marvel Universe. But aside from that, not a lot has come out. The most we know is WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Displaying glorious WandaVision, yes.
I know, of those two series, which one are you guys most looking forward to?
Neither.
You can't see my face right now, but I am shocked. Shocked that Ben said that.
So, which series to burn out actors' contracts are we looking forward to?
Yes, that's it exactly. Not that you think it's good, just like which one has your interest and you're going to check it out the most.
None.
Neither. It's I'm not paying Disney Plus for the privilege of watching
I assumed you were going to do what I do when I watch TV series and just make use of the internet,
I feel like WandaVision is going to try to be a weird amalgamation of House of M combined with Tom King's Vision book and with the suburbia bullshit. So I know what it's going to be, and I do not want.
The rumors are is it's supposed to be Wanda's powers are going crazy and she's fucking creating multiple dimensions and blah 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 to save Vision. Well, to try and save Vision.
And then she's going to have to realize at the end that she has to let him go. And it's, like I said, I feel like I know what it's going to be. I know what the visuals are going to be. Like I said, I imagine that Tom King's Vision book is going to influence this a lot.
Not a lot of people know what's going on because there's other rumors, too. It's like they're going to explain how mutants appear. And the Fantastic Four are going to appear in there as well. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, that's not going to happen.
I think...
It's like that rumor about what's-her-name being Jennifer Walters.
Well, it was reported like it was confirmed fact, so you can't really blame people for taking this.
Yes, I can. I can totally blame... Because they
Then you are... can't... You thought... You said that, that doesn't sound too bad. You can't walk it back and claim I called it the whole time.
I never called it, but what I'm saying is now... Just like all the other news I see, is a lot of it's being reported as verified without confirmation, and then a week later it's denied, and then walked back. Except this time it's entertainment versus something political or something else. So it's just a fact of the 24-hour news cycle to where everyone has to report
it first. Don't fucking blame the 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah,
that has to do with fucking bloggers who pretend they're reporters.
We got this covered, lies. Anyway, as far as Wanda bringing mutants, for what I think is going to happen is, yeah, it's going to be Wanda's powers are growing and expanding the fact that she's becoming a Thanos-level threat. And, you know, it'll open the door, narratively speaking, to bring mutants in. Well, I don't think the Fantastic Four is going to show up here. I mean, the most direct connection of whatever happens going forward is, you know, we're going from the elements in WandaVision are all going to curtail into the plot of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which I think that's going to play a larger part in explaining or bringing mutants in. Honestly, I think they're going to go with the trope of mutants have existed and are treated as like urban rumors slash Professor Xavier is using his mutant powers to like, you know, fudge history and a little Vaseline on the lens of life, if you will. Falcon and Winter Soldier.
I would honestly, there's no fucking way this is going to happen because it makes fucking sense. And writers these days don't do anything that makes sense. I would use Falcon and Winter Soldier to explain mutants. The whole idea of Captain America going back in time and living a life and fucking having kids and those kids having kids and crossbreeding and shit and the fucking super soldier serum somehow creating fucking mutants.
Well, yeah,
makes more fucking sense.
That's almost exactly how they created mutants in Ultimate Marvel, where they did experiments in World War II and created Wolverine and the original Nick Fury, because the Nick Fury that we got in the comics when Ultimate Marvel came is technically Nick Fury Jr. And then it somehow just became airborne and spread around the world and got into human DNA.
It wasn't airborne. It was a sexual disease.
It got out into the world. Falcon, you got, you know, Sam Wilson trying to live up to the legacy that Cap has bestowed on him, and Bucky's keeping watch on that. We're going to have elements within the government or even big business like they did in the Sam Wilson Captain America title, or trying to create their own super soldier in U.S. Agent and trying to reclaim the shield. You know, and there's definitely going to be overtones that was in the comic of, that's not my Captain America. You know? Which is honestly some of the dumbest dialogue I've ever read. It's like, well, that guy didn't fight for his country the way Steve Rogers did. Blah, blah, blah. And God, I wonder, it hurts to think about that. The biggest thing is, like, look, I love the fact they cast George St. Pierre as Batroc in Winter Soldier. I love the fact they're bringing him back and he's going to have more time, more screen time, and we'll get to see him fight a bit more against Bucky and Sam. Looking forward to that. There was it Daniel Bruhl or Bruhl who played Zemo in Winter or in Civil War. He's coming back and he's going to be like legit Baron Zemo with the purple hood and everything. As much as I'm interested to see what they do with WandaVision, I'm looking forward to the more basic and comfortable storytelling that's going to be in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
They should just go with the actual Baron Zemo. They shouldn't have Hedrick or whatever the fuck his name, Zemo, return. They should have, hey, guess what? There's this fucking Nazi that
got his head stuck in a bucket of super glue.
No, not just that. Where the Nazis were trying to recreate the super soldier serum using fucking viruses and shit, and ended up experimenting on this fucking dude and extending his lifespan.
Well, that could be true too. And also, like, when you talk about Zemo, I love the fan rumor that when they introduce the monarch of Latveria, that when he takes over, he's going to absorb the, like, Sokovia was part of Latveria in ancient times, and so they can keep that bullshit going. There's even rumors that that fort slash castle that the Avengers were raiding in the beginning of Age of Ultron is going to become Castle Von Doom. That's so far in the future. That'd be interesting. But no, I'm looking more towards Falcon Winter Soldier than I am WandaVision, Loki. We're getting Tom Hiddleston as, you know, the Dark Prince of Asgard, so what's not to love? What If? And then you got the far future four. You got Hawkeye, Miss Marvel, Moon Knight, and She-Hulk. Of those four, which do you think you guys would check out first?
I'm just not feeling it, man. Not for any of them, honestly.
I'm most looking forward to see what they do with Moon Knight. You know, do the Moon whole... Knight. Sorry?
Moon Knight's not going to happen. Stop trying to make Moon Knight happen.
The show's going to happen, whether you like it to or not, Red.
Moon Knight is just another fucking Inhumans. You're trying to make something cool that it's not going to be fucking cool.
You know, I heard that argument with another friend of mine recently, but he was saying that about Hawkeye.
Same with Hawkeye.
I enjoy Moon Knight comics, you know, a lot of the more recent stuff. I never read a lot of the early, I think the earliest Moon Knight comic I ever read was The Fist of Khonshu, where he got they replaced the moon on his chest with the gold Ankh, and they really leaned into that. He's stronger at night depending on how full the moon is, and kind of ignored the multiple personality disorder.
They've tried so many dumb bullshit fucking things with Moon Knight. It's ridiculous. It's like, you want to make Batman. Just make him fucking Batman.
Well, isn't there already like a Nighthawk?
Nighthawk doesn't count. We don't talk about Nighthawk.
No, they've tried to make Batman like three or more than three or four times. But I mean, the three that spring to mind are Moon Knight, Nighthawk, and... Well, a lot of people made the claim that Black Panther is essentially a Batman. It's like, in some respects, they're not far off. Although I think there's more that's dissimilar than similar there with Batman. You know, no one ever complains about Black Panther not trying to make a positive change instead of just fighting crime, because that's all he fucking does. make positive changes and fight crime. But yeah, no. Out of those four, I mean, yeah. If they do She-Hulk, whoever they cast is Jessica or Jennifer Walters, and I hope they lean a little bit, not too hard, but a little bit into the John Byrne She-Hulk, where, you know, maybe some fourth wall breaking. I wouldn't be opposed to that. You know, don't want to speak for you guys, but I think we all have some love for Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan. I look forward to checking that out at least. But yeah, the out of the forthcoming stuff, like the only one I really don't care about is Hawkeye. I've never been a huge fan of Hawkeye. I don't even, aside from whatever backwards loophole clause Jeremy Renner had in his Hawkeye contract, is about the only thing I can think of to explain this show happening.
I just don't see a show about Hawkeye or the Hawkeyes, because
Kate
you're gonna have
Bishop.
Kate Bishop is gonna work, because does anyone even like have a connection to this Kate Bishop without like Young Avengers there?
Not really. I was honestly surprised. Like, if they don't use Hawkeye the series as a hackneyed backdoor excuse to bring the Young Avengers into the MCU, I'll be very surprised.
I don't think Young Avengers will work extremely well either, honestly, because the biggest thing holding them back is the fact that Young Avengers, you have to get kid actors, and kid actors age really fucking quickly. And you're gonna either have to like you either make the show really expensive by having lots of really movie level effects all the time. Or you turn it into something akin to a CW show with a low budget.
You could do the Percy Jackson thing and hire fucking 20-year-olds to play 17-year-olds.
I do want to ask you guys this. Would it be fair to say that out of all of these Phase 4 shows, What If would be the one to be at least the most entertaining?
Biggest issue for me is, again, the fact that there is a tangible price, a barrier of entry, and that is called Disney Plus.
Ben, that's not what I asked you at all. That's not even remotely close. I asked, out of all these shows, would it be fair to say that What If would be the most entertaining for you to watch? This is a land of the hypothetical. You have more than enough money to buy Disney Plus lock, stock, and barrel. Just would you enjoy What If over all these other
I
shows?
don't know who's the showrunner of What If.
What's the concept of What If, Ben?
I know what the concept is, but
So
What
would you
If
not
can,
find that entertaining?
in a vacuum, yes, but a lot has to do with who's the showrunner, because you said it's an animated show. Does the person who's running it have a history of animation? If so, what shows did he work on in the past? Like, you're asking for an answer in a vacuum, and I'm giving you an answer in a
I'm
vacuum
asking a
of.
yes or no
And
question,
I
Ben.
said the concept itself could be entertaining, yes.
Then that's all I needed to know. I don't need to know whether or not you care about the showrunner and all that, because I know you, that's all you care about half the time. You're worried about all the details. I just asked a blanket question.
Things
How
are
about you,
good.
Red? Would you think What If would be the only show you'd care about?
No.
All right then. Oh, wait, we forgot to mention there's going to be a Nick Fury television series starring Sam Jackson.
Jesus Christ. I like Sam Jackson, but the dude's almost 60 years old, and you can see it when he walks around these days. He doesn't move that well anymore. He's getting old.
Yeah. I mean, Lord knows when that'll happen. The fact is, by the time most of these Phase 4 shows actually get to us, whether it, you know, we're getting WandaVision, cut about a month and a half from now, Falcon, Loki, and What If are all some varying points next year, and the last four aren't until 20. Basically, by the time we get back to most of this stuff will have caught up timeline wise with the events of Endgame, more or less. And that's all thanks to Corona.
I can't find myself getting excited about the Marvel shows. And the DC shows are winding down big time. Like after the shows we talked about, all that's left is pretty much Legends of Tomorrow, which had half a okay season, and then the rest went downhill drastically fast.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to Marvel, or like superhero movies and TV shows and shit like that, we're at the point that Western country and Westerns got to.
We've hit burnout.
Maximum saturation. Burnout.
Maximum saturation, burnout, and getting along in the tooth. And that, Westerns lasted a little longer than that. And that's because DC and Marvel decided just to slow shit down. And that's why people are all burning out and saying, oh, yeah, we want other ideas now, I guess.
See, the, and again, to use the Midnight Suns analogy, is as much as a
stop
lot of
stop trying to make Midnight Suns happen.
They happened and they had their day. I am merely using them as a reference point. I'm not trying to make them happen again, Red. Like I said, because of how they work, because they had somebody clear it, steering the ship. And they have that with Feige, but the problem is Feige is way more concerned, or at least was, because like I said, Corona's thrown us all into a tailspin. They don't, the TV shows on both Marvel and DC side, they don't have a Kevin Feige at DC, and you need to have somebody with a clear view of purpose to make this stuff work. Never mind writing, casting, and all that. You need somebody steering the ship, and they don't really have that for the television series. Also, further, okay, Legends of Tomorrow. I love Legends of Tomorrow, but I love them for the same reason I loved Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is it's a fun, campy romp, and whether they get stuff right or wrong, I find it unabashedly entertaining. Number two, we didn't talk about Black Lightning at all.
I think there was a good reason for that.
Well, maybe you didn't grow up reading Batman and the Outsiders, but I did. Chris Williams as Jefferson Pierce, I think, is one of those guys that they got the right actor for that character, because, you know, I prefer seeing him doing, you know, Mr. Pierce in the high school more than I see him walking around in that fiberglass light up, you know, neon mess that is the Black Lightning suit. You know, I love everything I love about that show has nothing to do with superpowers. It's the human characters and their interactions. I'd sooner see Cress Williams, you know, as Pierce dealing with his family troubles and talking with his father figure, Peter Gamby, who's played by the incredible James Remar. And how he hasn't played Commissioner Gordon in some form of Batman live media is an absolute tragedy, because that dude can rock a Commissioner Gordon mustache. He does it in every episode of that show. I don't care about, like I said, I don't care about the superheroics more as I care about the human drama in Black Lightning. And if you slept on the show, folks, if you have any interest, I highly recommend at least try the first season. It's a little wonky, but it's all the best things are there. And after that, they really lean heavily into a lot of comic book history with Black Lightning. And, you know, I'm surprised at the restraint at which they introduced his daughters as Thunder and Lightning and their respective powers, because I figured that would have been like episode one. It was like at least episode three. I don't even know, like, there are any DC shows coming down the pike. I know they got Stargirl. They're rebroadcasting the DC Universe Swamp Thing series on the CW right now. And according to some of the news reports, the ratings are doing very well, and there are rumors that the CW might resurrect it with a season two.
Eh.
I don't know. Do either of you guys watch the Swamp Thing show?
No.
Okay, when I say it is really good, I mean it is really good. Not just JT's love of something because it's a comic book based show. It's there are legitimate scares. The acting is there. They folded Blue Devil into the storyline for I can't really figure what apparent reason, but they cast Ian Ziering from 90210 as the Blue Devil's human alter ego, and is an absolute joy to watch.
I didn't even know they had this one thing in the show.
Well, yeah. That's because you're smarter than us and you ignore DC Universe, Red. Except for fuck Batman.
I think we're getting to a point where we're winding down a little bit here. We talked about all these shows, what we're watching, what we're not watching, and why we're not watching. I think that as time went on, I think the fatigue is real. Not sure if it's outright superhero fatigue or just the way that they're being presented right now. I think everyone got oversaturated with the shit. I think it's time to take a break. Not saying superheroes are a big part of my life. I'm not going to take them out of my life completely, but I think that when it comes to movies and television, I think everyone wants a break. And I think that when Black Widow comes out, we will see numbers that will shock some people, because I honestly think that the overall feeling in the audience is, yeah, I've seen this. What else you got? And I think that's the same with the. I think it's the same with the, with both shows from either company, Marvel shows or DC shows. I think we've all seen it play out as you know, a gritty Netflix series to a more family friendly CW series to a super ultra family friendly NBC series. We've seen the whole gamut, and we are done. And I have no interest in the Disney Plus series. I just don't. It's gone. That's my feelings. JT, final thoughts?
I think if you listen to that bit about the Hellstrom series, I've almost come down to Ben and Red's level of not expecting a whole lot. There's stuff I'm looking forward to until I exercise my 3-episode rule. You know, we'll see what happens with WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier. And I agree with Ben. We have not hit absolute maximum, no more burnout on this stuff, but we are pulling into the driveway, folks. And it's like Red said with eventually Cowboys and Indians, it just doesn't satisfy anymore, and things go in cycles, and eventually we'll come back to it, and maybe somebody that grew up on this stuff will become that next writer that'll create another TV show that'll become like the biggest show in the world, and this thing will start all over again. It's the nature of things, but yeah, I'm like coming next year, about the only shows I'm going to really be watching are Flash and Black Lightning. And, you know, that's about it. So, Red?
The sad thing about the whole, I'm not looking forward to any Marvel or DC movies, is I know for a fucking fact, and I've known for several years now, that Marvel has two big fucking cards to play that can revitalize the fucking genre. It's called the X-Men and the Fantastic Four. And yet, Feige is still just hiding them up his butthole, not doing shit with them. Yeah. Why? I don't fucking know. But it looks like he doesn't like making money.
I think they're holding it for when they know for sure the numbers aren't there anymore. And then they're like, oh, look, we're giving you what you want. But I think the problem is they're underestimating the fatigue.
Now's the time to fucking do it, because Corona has destroyed fucking Disney.
Yeah.
And well, Disney needs money.
They do need money. You're right. I wouldn't say destroyed, but they're definitely in for a massive restructuring after 2020.
And Feige wants to save the fucking franchise and shit. X-Men and Fantastic Four is the way to fucking go.
Fast track it. Totally agree.
Yeah, I would like to understand why they're never mind. They got to set stuff up, and they got to get all the tent poles in place and cross the I's and dot the T's. I understand that's part and parcel of the business, but not even a tease.
You don't have to set anything up with them. You just have to make two fucking things. One, mutants have always been around. It's just that they were under hiding because the world persecutes us, kind of thing. Two, Fantastic Four have always been around. They just never considered themselves superheroes. What were you doing through the whole fucking Thanos thing? Then you used the Captain Marvel excuse. There's other worlds out there that need help, not just Earth.
Or they were trapped in the negative zone the whole time.
Or you go,
they're in space, having an adventure. Yeah.
But yeah, that's...
Why didn't Reed Richards come out with a way to time travel? Well, I was working on an alternate ways to save the fucking Earth. Not just time travel. Who the fuck thinks of time travel?
You know, honestly, if they do something like that, I wouldn't put it past them to have him and the FF were being held captive by the Council of Reeds.
Yeah.
Which...
Anyways, I totally agree. I think this is a point to wrap up. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.